south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, for all you guys and gals out there who are looking to get residency, and those of you who are in the process of getting residency in whatever Latin country, I've got some news for you that you're probably not going to like. Turns out, and you're not going to read this anywhere, the United States State Department has been delivering and installing a certain kind of residency software, basically gifting it to Latin American governments. And, you know, everything Big Daddy USA gives for free, they'll take. But nothing's for nothing, right? Just look at the price you pay for being on Google and Twitter. The price is your anonymity, your privacy, and that's part of your freedom, right? So anyway, the U.S. State Department is gifting software to, quote, streamline and make the residency process more efficient. Who'd have thought residency software even existed? I'm sure knowing the State Department, they included a few back doors in that software. So anyway, what that software does is automate the residency process. Sounds good, right? Well, not so fast. Think about it. It makes it very easy for the U.S. State Department to track everyone who's getting residency throughout Latin America and, of course, every other country in the world, too. Now, you know, before all this, getting residency was a private thing between you and the country you're getting residency in. The only connection to the U.S. in the review process is that you have to have an FBI good conduct report, you know, a rap sheet, done on yourself. Then you hand that over to Latin American immigration officials. And that was it regarding the U.S. Now, just this week, I was talking to some Latin American immigration lawyers. And their take on it is this. They live in Latin America, so they have no idea that the U.S. has turned into a virtual spy machine. Because down here in Latin America, that kind of stuff doesn't exist. They haven't got the money, the initiative, or the will to effectively spy on their citizens or on anyone. Anyway, most immigration lawyers down here, they just look at new software as progress. Whereas before this software was implemented, everything was done by hand. All the stamps, seals, signatures, etc., etc. And there's plenty of them involved in the residency process. Well, that made for lots of delays and occasional screw-ups. Because anywhere along the way, one of those bureaucratic slugs could drop the ball. I know lots of cases where that's happened. For example, the moment you sign the residency papers and hand in all the paperwork, the government slugs and parasites in charge would tell you your residency card or cédula should be ready within 6 months. And as you longtime expats know, that promised 6 month time frame often stretches into a year, especially with all this COVIDiot stuff going on. It's the universal excuse these days, isn't it? The bread's stale? COVID. Cloudy today? It was COVID. Toilet not working? COVID. Much better than the age-old excuse, mañana time. So then you might ask, why do residencies take from 6 months to a year? Nothing could take that long. After all, you handed in all your paperwork. They've got everything right there in a file. Well, it's more complicated than that. It's not just because your Latin lawyer's on mañana time, it's just the whole bureaucratic chain is on mañana time. And though it may sound that the traditional way of doing things in immigration was a crappy system, you'll see in a moment it was really a good thing. Because, you see, the gift of that U.S. immigration software was supposed to simplify all that. Well, in reality, there's two things going on here. It's just another way for Uncle Slam to keep better track of his sheep who have left the barn. But more problematic, the new process is all software-driven, with little or no human intervention. And because of that, here's what's happening right now. You know that once you have residency in a Latin country, in order to maintain it, you have to stay in that country a certain amount of days or weeks or months each year. In the case of Guatemala, for example, to maintain your permanent residency, you have to pop into the country at least 1 day a year. And that's one of the things that makes Guatemalan residency so appealing, because other countries, some of them, you have to stay there a month or 2 or 3 months a year. And if your plan B entails not necessarily getting the hell out of Dodge, but living up in the States most of the time, and having that option, it's an insurance policy that will kick in if you have to make a quick exit. That way, you've got a place to go and a nice network to help you along once you get there. A lot of gringos do that, you know. They continue to live in the States, pop in and out of Guatemala 1 day a year, just to maintain that permanent residency. So when things get really bad up north, I know, it's really bad already, but some people have businesses to run, etc. That is, the lucky ones who didn't have their business crash and burn with the COVIDiot thing and the lockdowns. So yes, there are plenty of gringo expats, part-time expats, who pop back and forth. And they have to be vigilant regarding how much time they have to spend in their Latin country to maintain residency. Anyway, up till recently, in the immigration office in Guatemala, there were dozens of slugs pushing mounds of paperwork. And if in the past, a gringo with permanent residency happened to be a little bit off on scheduling his 1 day per year entrance requirement for maintaining residency, well, the slugs in immigration would just look the other way and give him a pass. In other words, if you're off by a couple of days or a month or whatever, it didn't matter, you'd slip right on through. Oh, and by the way, up till now anyway, you're always able to get an extension on that 1 day thing if you had a legit excuse like sickness, operation, death in the family, lots of reasons. And then your trusty Latin immigration lawyer would fill out some paperwork and fix it for you. That was always the case with most Latin countries regarding residency. Generally, your trusted Latin lawyer can make things happen in his country that a lawyer in the States could never make happen up there. Anyway, until just recently, once you got your residence in a Latin country, they were always pretty flexible about the time required in the country to maintain that residency. But not anymore. Now that the U.S. State Department has gifted immigration offices with that software, if you miss that in-country requirement by 1 day, your immigration status is canceled. And if you want to get it back again, you got to start all over from step one. And the thing is, with this COVIDiot lockdown crap that's been going on for more than a year and a half now, there have been quite a few gringos and expats who just couldn't make it down for various reasons, including multiple airline cancellations. In fact, that happened to me with Avianca Airlines. They canceled my flight 3 times. I'm still waiting on it. I never did make the scheduled trip. And some gringos overshot their 1 day in country for Guatemala due to quarantine issues and being stuck in other countries at the time, like Canada, the UK, and Australia, who've had very strict lockdown and quarantine requirements. The problem is, you see, a year or so ago when the lockdowns first started kicking in heavily, many gringos with residency contacted their Latin immigration lawyer, and he assured them if they happened to have miscalculated on that 1 day requirement or had some problems regarding quarantining or whatever, they were told it was very likely the immigration department would give them an extension. But that was before the U.S. Treasury Department gifted them that magic software. So right now, I personally know a handful of gringos who got caught up in all this and are now SOL. And as expat Eddie said, there's not even a politician, bureaucrat, or a cop you can grease. You can't grease software. Not even software that's in Spanish. So just to put you on notice, there's no leniency anymore if you overshoot that 1 day a year requirement for residency in Guatemala. But it's not just Guatemala, it's most all Latin countries. And as you'll see shortly, it's even worse in Mexico. And as for the remaining bureaucratic slugs in charge, their hands are tied, since the computer program's making the decisions. Oh, and one more thing about that 1 day a year, you have to be in Guatemala to maintain your permanent residency. Or in fact, with any Latin American residency requiring you to spend a certain amount of time each year in the country. The countdown begins the moment you get your residency, signified by a stamp or seal or even an extra page attached to your passport. That's when they'll hand over that residency or cédula card too. So, for example, again, in the case of Guatemala, you've got 1 year from the date you actually got your residency, and your yearly return 1 day visit is not based on the calendar year. Sounds simple, right? But for some people, it ain't. I do know of certain gringos and expats who have made that mistake. For example, a married couple from New Jersey got their permanent residency approved in June of 2018, and they didn't make it back into the country for that minimum 1 day before the same date on June of 2019. They figured wrongly that if they just popped in any time during 2019, that would fulfill the requirement because they got their residency in 2018. But they came in November of 2019. So in fact, it wasn't 12 months that elapsed before they got their residency stamp, but 17 months. But since that happened in the old days, before they got that new program, the slugs in the immigration department understood the problem and gave them a pass. That, along with a little grease provided by the immigration attorney. But that was then. Those days are over. And for those gringos and expats who didn't have their timing right and were promised because of the COVID crap there would be extensions, well, that's not how it worked out. So there are some very disappointed gringos and would-be expats out there. Now, I'm just using the example of Guatemala because I know of a few cases where that's happened. It's happening in all Latin American countries now. In fact, I heard just yesterday, Mexico's really cracking down on residency paperwork. If you get stopped by Mexican authorities, you have to have the original paperwork on you and your passport, not a copy or a scan. And that's totally against what most all long-term expats believe, because if you carry your real paperwork, you're always at risk of getting robbed or losing them. Then you're really screwed. You'll never know how difficult and how many hoops you have to jump through trying to get new paperwork and ID documents while in a foreign country. And imagine trying to accomplish all that if you don't speak Spanish. Anyway, Mexico's really cracking down, and gringos are bearing the brunt in the process. That's because Mexico's a magnet for illegals, mostly these days anyway, coming up through other Latin American countries, including most recently Cuba and Haiti too. Final destination, of course, the USA. Gringolandia. Even Mexico's President Lopez, in the last couple of days, has called it a state of immigration emergency. Isn't it funny, even ironic? Mexico now is finding itself packed with illegal immigrants. Even the president of Mexico says they're continuously draining government resources. And that's why gringos and expats in Mexico are suffering because of the new mandated immigration sweeps. Just lately, Mexican cops have been concentrating on public transportation, pulling over buses, checking the documents of every person on the bus. And as you probably know, a good percentage of gringos and expats in Mexico are backpacker types, and they love public transportation because it's dirt cheap. And as mentioned, if you don't have your original paperwork on you and or residency documents, and God forbid you've overstayed your 180 days if you're not a permanent resident, Mexican cops and immigration slugs are really cracking down on that. You know, U.S. citizens can just pop into Mexico and stay 180 days. Then you got to get out. Unless you have permanent residency. If not, the cops have the right to detain you for 24 hours. And if you've overstayed your 180 days regular tourist visa, they have the right to ship you back to the States, and sometimes they do. Though most times they'll just fine you a dollar or so each day. It's about the money, you know? And if you're in Mexico and you've overstayed your visa for quite a few months, they'll blacklist your passport in the computer. And if you're a repeat offender, they won't let you back into Mexico legally for a year. Oh, and by the way, just recently they started cracking down on gringos and expats who pop in and out of the country after their 180 days is up. The bureaucrats and slugs are not happy with that yo-yoing back and forth. And that crackdown, which extends to gringos and expats, is all again because of the huge flood of illegals pouring in from other Latin countries pushing on through to get into the States. Which reminds me, the other day I got an email from a bleeding heart progressive lady, Rose B. from Massachusetts, calling me cruel, heartless, and inhumane because I'm against opening the doors to poor illegals with sixth grade educations, no skills, bad habits, and no resources. I know they want to get to the USA to have a better life. Seems like every person in the world who's poor and uneducated wants to come to the US to have a better life. And according to Rose, we should just let them waltz right in. Well, Rose, here's my take. I'm not against selectively letting poor immigrants into the country, but number one, and I know some people are going to hate me for saying this, they're dishonest by definition. Yep, once they hit US soil, every single one of them's a multiple lawbreaker. Call them lawbreakers, call them criminals, that's what they are. And they keep on breaking the law over and over again. Because by definition, if you sneak into the United States, you broke a law. And as you sneak across the border, you're trespassing on private property. That's broken law number two. And these days, the vast majority of illegals pouring into the States are from countries south of Mexico, you know, Central America and South America. And that means they snuck into Mexico illegally too. Broken law number three. And along the way, to smooth things out, they have to tell multiple lies when answering questions like where you come from, where you're going, what's your immigration status. Just like with politicians, the better you can lie, the farther ahead you'll get. And illegal immigrants keep breaking laws. They're serial lawbreakers. 100% of them trespass on private property, usually dozens of times. Then when they get to the States, they hook up with another criminal who sells them fake social security cards, licenses, and other ID documents. And at that point, they're no longer just lawbreakers. They're felons. And Rose, even if we were to give them a pass on all that, because life is tough and you have to do what you got to do to survive. You know the old story. If a mother's kids are starving, she'll steal a loaf of bread. A crime that's easily pardoned. So even if we give them a pass on all that, still we see in the press and the media every day that the infrastructure in the U.S. is falling apart. Roads and bridges are well beyond their life expectancy. They're shot. We've got millions and millions of homeless people in the U.S. And in California, it's at critical mass. We've got military veterans whose number one cause of death is suicide. We've got able-bodied young guys and gals living in their mother's basements, college graduates, because they can't get a job that'll supply both a living wage and enough money left over to pay off those six-figure school loan payments. Meanwhile, you've got good-hearted humanitarian people like Rose, who want to open the doors to all the world's poor and dispossessed. Funny how in opinion polls, the more northeastern a person lives in the States, the more pro-open border. Rose sort of proves the point. She lives in Massachusetts. You certainly don't hear that kind of talk from people living close to the border, like Texas and Nevada. Seems to me just another case of, I'm all for it, but just not in my neighborhood. Right, Rose? Massachusetts? Which is only something like 1,000 miles from the Mexican border, where all the action is. So, Rose, in the end, I'm all for bringing a selected amount of immigrants in. But only after the U.S. has cleaned up its own act. Its homeless problem, veteran problem, disastrous public school problem, big city ghetto problem, decrepit infrastructure problems, etc., etc. And finally, Rose, and all you guys and gals out there who think along her lines, if you feel so bad about those poor people south of the border, why don't you sponsor one or two of them or a family? Invite them to live in your neighborhood. Give them a job. Pay for their kids to go to school. Pay for their health care. But I doubt you'll ever actually entertain the idea. You know, it's so easy to say the right words, to be a do-gooder, a humanitarian, pass out the good guy t-shirts. It's so easy to help people when you're using other people's money. Anyway, that's my rant about immigration and open borders. I'm certainly going to get a lot of hate mail for that. What else is new? But before you fire off an angry email to me, don't forget to tell me what you've done for humanity lately. So, do I sound like Scrooge or the Grinch? I know we're closing in on the Christmas holidays and such, but ever since this COVID crap, the lockdowns and the quarantines, the edicts from the ass swipes in big government and big pharma, somehow it seems I've got absolutely no goodwill towards men. Who knows? That could change. Though it does remind me of that famous Bible passage where someone asked Jesus about the tragic lives of the poor, and Jesus replied, my son, or whatever LGBTWTF pronoun was in vogue at the time. He said, the poor will always be with us. Which basically means that I'm talking to you, Rose. If Jesus can't fix it, you think you're gonna? But I digress. Man, did I digress. All right, now an email from Mr. V. He says, good morning. Hope all is well, Johnny. I have gone all the way back to the start of your podcast. And in doing so the other day, I had to laugh out loud during my afternoon commute. You were telling of expat Eddie and guys with Latina girlfriends and their obsession with ear hair. That had me in stitches. I believe that was in an early 2012 podcast. By the way, Johnny, that Latina ear hair pruning scenario also happens to us gringos who've been married for 20 plus years to Latinas who grew up most of their lives in the U.S. All right, me, Johnny here, a little clarification. Now, for those of you who weren't listening to the program way back when, what Mr. V is referring to is the fact that Latinas love to groom their men. And once, way back when expat Eddie and I were shooting the breeze about it, specifically commenting on the fact that when you see a guy over 50 or 60, oftentimes he'll have hair growing out of his nose and ears. I know, pretty disgusting, right? Well, down here that just means he doesn't have a Latina girlfriend or wife. And if he's shaggy like that and does have a Latina girlfriend or wife, it's almost a sure thing. She doesn't really love him. She is only in it for the economics of it. Because you see, in most gringo Latina relationships, you can tell right away if she's in love with the guy by the way she dotes on him and the body language, the way she hangs real close, preens him, does the ear and nose hair thing, a lot of eye contact. But they're definitely on a different plane when it comes to possessiveness. And I'm saying that based on my own experience, expat Eddie's experiences, and dozens of gringo expats who report the very same thing. And of course, the same thing goes with gringo Latino relationships too. Gringo ladies I know who are in relationships with Latino guys tell me Latin males are toxically jealous. But it seems gringas love those Latin lovers because they're warm and attentive, much more so than the average gringo male. But then there's the dark side. Like, for example, if a gringo guy gets into a relationship with a Latina or vice versa, a gringo hooking up with a Latin guy, there's something you'll find out right away. If we're talking about a gringo guy and his Latina girlfriend, you will definitely have to turn your telephone and your phone password over to her because she'll want to look at all your contacts, all your text messages too, even if she doesn't speak English. Of course, that won't happen on the first date, but once you're a couple, look out. And if you don't turn it over or if you begrudgingly turn it over, she'll think something's up. Then get ready because you're in for a bumpy ride. It happens with gringa ladies and their Latino boyfriends too. Oh, and it's an absolute fact. Guys, if your Latina really loves you, when you're away from her, out with the guys or shopping or whatever, she's going to want an account of what you did during that time. And oftentimes when you're off to the store, she'll phone you up just to say hi, but what she's really doing is checking on you. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've heard gringos with Latina better halves tell me. When he's out alone at a shopping center or just walking, his Latino girlfriend will phone up and want to do a video call just to make sure he's in the place he said he was going to be. but you know, plans changed, and that's how innocent gringos often end up in the doghouse. Now, as for me, you know, I'm big time, low profile. I do no video calls with anyone. In fact, I got a piece of duct tape over the lens in my cell phone, so it's virtually impossible for me to do a video call, even by mistake. It's been my MO ever since I bought my first cell phone. But let me tell you, it's caused me a lot of grief with Latina girlfriends. If you don't do a video call, they'll think you're up to no good. Now, of course, all these mating, dating, love, and romance peculiarities I'm laying on you right now are a direct consequence of the rampant Latino male infidelity problem. In fact, as for me, every single Latina of dating age I've ever met has admitted to having a Latin boyfriend or boyfriends who's cheated on her multiple times, and sometimes they'll admit the guy beat her, too. It's funny, too. Well, not funny, odd. Every single first date I've ever been on with a Latina, the subject of her last boyfriend, cheating on her, comes up. And instead of calling the guy a jerk or a loser, she gets quiet and sad for a moment. So for you single gringo guys, the reality is if you're going to go out with a Latina, the fact that she even accepted a date with you is because she's unattached or doesn't have a boyfriend, right? So naturally on that first date, the question's going to come up. How come a nice, beautiful young lady like you doesn't have a boyfriend? What's up with that? And believe me, unless she's a widow, you will hear the story of the guy who cheated on her, often multiple times. That's why she's back on the dating scene, throwing the dice once again. Of course, it goes both ways. She's going to ask why a gringo like you doesn't have a wife or girlfriend. But here's the difference. You'll likely believe what she says because gringos, as a rule, are pretty trusting. But she most likely will have her doubts about you. Because, you see, she's so used to hearing lies from Latin guys, seeing her dad cheat on her mother, her brothers cheat on their girlfriends and wives, etc., etc. That means you'll have to prove that you're not attached, that you're eligible. Part of that involves handing over your phone and your password. Now, of course, that's not going to happen on the first date. That'd be a little too forward, too pushy. Oh, and I'm not saying Latinas in the mating and dating game won't lie to you either. It's almost a certainty if you're dating through one of those Latina Cupid dating websites. I'd say a good 80 to 90% of the girls on those sites are simple gold diggers. Someday, if you're interested, I'll do an entire show of boots-on-the-ground stories told to me personally by gringos who were scammed, sometimes multiple times, by those ladies on Latin Cupid dating sites. Though, not only scammed, some of them had their hearts broken at the same time. I know, you're thinking Tinder and all those hookup sites. That's the way people get together these days, right? Especially in the era of COVIDians. Well, man, I'm here to tell you, it's a minefield. It's worse than a minefield. And still, I think, and I can prove it in a number of ways, the number one way to meet a Latina or Latino with a heart of gold is to meet them when you're out and about in person. At a mall, bank, coffee shop, whatever. That's one way to cut through that fake dating site app crap. In fact, my own brother has a few sad stories about those dating apps. He wasn't on a Latin Cupid site. He was on Tinder and a Filipino Cupid site. He met a Filipina. They connected for about a month. He sent her the money to fly to Chicago. He went to O'Hare Field and waited 4 hours. She never showed up. Same thing happened to him with an American girl. I think she was from Montana. They were online for a month or so. He sent her the airfare. He went to the airport and she never showed up. Talk about a sucker punch to the ego. Oh, and by the way, the universal way to communicate is, of course, on WhatsApp because it's free. And when these two ladies didn't show up and knew they'd scammed him good, they blocked him on WhatsApp. There are dozens of other stories gringos have told me who've hooked up on those Latin Cupid sites. And pretty much the same thing happened, only in this case, they flew down to the Latin country to meet the girl and she never showed up. It's really sad how American guys get sucked into those things. Newbies on those sites are so gullible. And for your information, here are the red flags. If you go on those Latin Cupid sites, the girls always post their pictures. And if they're really sexy and there's lots of bikini shots, that just about guarantees she's a gold digger. Now, the good girls will be sitting with their mom and dad or grandma or having dinner or at the park with their friends, at a party or disco, playing with a dog. The good girls, the nice girls, will be well made up and dressed nice, but they won't have any sexy boob and butt shots on those Cupid sites. Well, maybe 1 out of 10 pics will be really sexy because Latinas are like that. Though the good girls, the serious girls who are big on family, will tease with maybe 1 sexy shot, but the rest of the photos will be with friends and family. Now, if you go to one of those Latin Cupid sites, first thing you notice is that around 80% of the photos are extremely sexy and provocative. And of course, guys are drawn to that. But the more extreme and sexy the photos, the greater chance she's a gold digger who's stringing lots of guys on like you. Second big red flag, if the lady will not do a video call with you, that means there's a good chance she's not the girl at all in the photos. But she'll give you a million excuses. The camera on her phone doesn't work. The internet sucks where she's at. Out of range, or her Wi-Fi signal's bad. Please, if you fall for that, we all know today, no matter how bad your internet is, it doesn't impede the video functions on your phone. Red flag number three, she speaks English. That could mean lots of things. That she's high maintenance, jaded, parents have dough, she's overly pampered, a Latina princess, watches tons of U.S. cable TV, the retired Asians, all that junk. That means she's heavily influenced by what's happening up in the States. I've noticed that after a while, those relationships do not seem to last. Because Latinos who speak English, often their main objective is not love and romance, it's to live permanently in the States. Oh, and another big red flag is if the Latina has been to the States. And if she's been to the States, I'm not talking about sneaking in illegally now. That means her parents really do have money. And if she's got a decent car, she's definitely high maintenance. Now, of course, as expat Eddie said, everyone's definition of high maintenance is different. For example, I know one gringo who gives his Latina girlfriend $500 a month. He goes back and forth to the States and he helps her out. She also works and makes about $350 a month. So then you might ask, is she high maintenance? I'd say definitely not. But I know another gringo whose Latina girlfriend says $500 isn't enough, so he gives her $1,000 a month. Well, if she wasn't high maintenance when he first started going out with her, she is now. Because there are dentists and physicians here in Latin America that don't make $1,000 a month. Hey, I know I'm going to get some hate mail on this topic. But remember, I'm just the messenger, telling you the information I've been getting from gringos and expats that I know, who've been deep into the mating, dating, love, and romance game. Would you rather me softball this stuff and sugarcoat it? Well, there'll be more on this topic next show if I don't get canceled. But before we go today, let's finish off Mr. V's email. He says, Johnny, my wife and I plan to retire in the next 3 to 5 years, back to her family's home in Guatemala City or somewhere near the Antigua Guatemala area. However, the family home is looking less and less like an option due to my wife's niece. Insert bad descriptive word of choice here, he says. Now, the niece, she has a tendency to connive to get her name on other people's legal papers, etc. Now she's trying to pull that crap with me and my wife. The British side of me wants to scream the C word, if you know what I mean. But thankfully, domestic tranquility rules the day. Anyway, we hope to get back to Guatemala in early 2022 and start looking for properties. In the end, Johnny, I know that was probably more background than you wanted to hear, but what I'm really saying is your podcast and your Central and South American ground truth is far more accurate regarding the people, governments, and way of life than anything put out by any government and or private sector or country analysts and so-called experts. Keep up the good work, Johnny. Regards, Mr. V. That from a British-Irish gringo living in Maryland with a Latina wife of 20 years, a Guatemalan wife at that.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Latino, Spanish,